Hello, and welcome to another fact-filled, fast-paced NABBW teleseminar on a topic of interest to Boomer women and their families. In a moment, I will introduce our guest expert, Pamela Sams, CRPC, which stands for Certified Retirement Planning Counselor, and Pamela is NABBW's retirement planning expert. And we will have a discussion on the topic of life after work, creating a retirement income. Now, before I get a chance to introduce Pam, let me introduce myself and set the stage for everyone. I'm Ann Holmes, the Boomer-in-Chief of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which is found online at nabbw.com, and we have a forum at boomerwomenspeak.com and a Facebook page that's getting more and more attention, which is at facebook.com/nabbw. Our websites are the number one sites found via the major search engines when you search on the keywords baby boomer women. This call is an example of one of the many benefits we provide our members. As you know, this live call is free and available to the public, but we also record all of these types of calls that we do, and we have a collection of over 90 past teleseminars that are available free to our gold level membership. Now, let me say a little bit about the format of tonight's call. Get yourself comfortable and make sure that you have paper and pen because I bet that you're going to want to take some notes. For the next 45 minutes or so, I'll have the phone lines muted and Pam and I will be discussing tonight's topic. Then I'll open the lines for questions from our listening audience. If you have a question before I open the lines, just use the box on your computer screen to type it in. I'll be able to see it, and we've already had several good ones come in. And I will pass the questions on to Pam and we'll do our very best to get them all answered. Now that you have all of that understood, let me introduce our guest, Pamela J. Sams, CRPC. Pam Sams has spent the past 11 years helping women and their families improve their personal and financial wealth through solid financial planning. She is president of Jackson Sams Financial Services, a financial planning and wealth management firm located in Herndon, Virginia, near the Dulles Corridor. There, she focuses on helping women understand the importance of financial and retirement planning by placing their needs first, kind of like how they say on the airlines when you get on the plane and they say, put your own mask on first. And I think she probably believes the same kind of thing. So, not that we need oxygen masks, but it's good to be prepared. So, Pam firmly believes that sound investment management starts with an understanding of each woman's goals, which is why she insists that before investment decisions can be made, her clients need to work through the steps needed to develop their own financial plan. Pam is a graduate of the University of Missouri Columbia and has a financial management degree from Everett University. She's earned several client service and financial planning awards, and she successfully earned her CRPC, which stands for Chartered Financial Planning Counselor certification, through the College of Financial Planning. In the past, Pamela and I have talked about how couples are retirement challenged because they are not communicating clearly about retirement goals and strategies, even at retirement age or just retirement age, which is why Pam and I have decided that we need to start holding one teleseminar each month on retirement planning topics. And tonight, I'm delighted to say, is the first of these calls. Therefore, I'm delighted to welcome NABBW's own retirement planning expert, Pamela J. Sams, and I'll give you a chance, Pam, to say hi before we launch into our questions.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me again, Ann, and I do appreciate the kind words that you have in my bio describing my expertise in the area. It is definitely a very hot topic these days. That's what I'm seeing mostly in my financial planning practice is people challenged with what do I do with life after work, where am I going to live, what type of things that I'm going to do, how do I create retirement income out of all of the things that I've been accumulating over the last, 20, 30, 40 years of work. So I do appreciate the time that we'll spend together really going over a lot of that information for our members.
Oh, absolutely. It is really an important topic. It's one of the topics that I think I get the most questions on of any of the questions that people who are members in NABBW communicate with me about, you know, asking for advice, especially given that we've had some rocky financial times in the past decade or so, where in a lot of cases people thought they had their retirement portfolio and their savings all set for them, and then a little bit too many of us had the rug pulled out from under us. So I guess given all of that that we already know and we've already lived through, I guess my first question for you is, how can anyone begin to figure out how much she will need at retirement?
Well, I mean, that really depends on each person's lifestyle and what they want to achieve. So first off, what you need to do is really understand your family dynamics. Where do you want to live? What type of lifestyle that you want to accomplish? Are you going to stay in the same area? Are you going to move? Are you going to continue to work after retirement? And then really understand, how much does it take to run your household? And then from there, you can determine how much you're going to need in retirement. And really, you know, it's always the dreaded B word, and I'm not talking about the other one, I'm talking about budget. A lot of people tend to shy away from budgets. They don't live day-to-day on a budget, but it is crucial, thinking about retirement, having a budget in place, knowing where things go on a monthly basis. You're not going to be able to create, you're not going to be able to rely on your employer giving you a paycheck anymore. So you do have to create that yourself. So you do need to know on a monthly basis where things are going, how much you spend on food, how much you're going to spend on housing, how much you're going to spend on travel, things like that. And then from there, you can determine how much you're going to need from there. So really getting a good budget sheet and writing these things down and understanding and add it up now, as if you were already retired, where are these monies going on a monthly basis?
Okay. So it almost sounds like in addition to the fact that I think what you're saying is that we should start keeping track of where our spending is going right now, so that will help us to really know where our discretionary income is going. I mean, we all know, if we have a mortgage, how much the monthly mortgage is. At least I think most of us are at a point in our lives where we, whether we're married or not, we you know, in the old days, you know, sometimes the husband took care of all the financial stuff, and a wife might not know how much the mortgage was, or how much the maintenance on the car is, or something like that. But I think is it something that you would say is fair to say that most women have a grasp of some of those basic numbers these days?
It is probably, I get a mixture of both. I mean, I have some women that are fairly savvy in getting involved in the financial planning process, especially towards retirement. And then some are, you know, basically, like you said, the old days, just kind of clueless on what's going on there. That's why I really recommend, especially for retirement planning, getting on the same page with your significant other to really lay all of this out, because some people may have different visions of what they want in retirement. I think from my last conversation, Ann, we had, you know, some people wanted to be snowbirds, some people wanted to, you know, go down to Florida, while other people wanted to maybe go to New York, and those are different, you know, areas. And really understanding, you know, what are you going to do? You're living with this person and you're working day to day, you're raising children, but sometimes you really don't sit down and long enough to say, okay, what is life going to look like at the work for us? What do you what do you want to do? And then engage in a conversation with your significant others, like, this is what I envision for retirement. Are we on the same page? And if you're not, really determine, you know, where you're going to do some compromising, maybe, you know, spend part of the year. I have some clients that spend part of the year in Florida, maybe 6 months out of the year, and then they have the other 6 months at their regular, you know, home in Northern Virginia, and then some go down to Florida. So there's, you know, looking at making some compromises in there, but you really have to get a solid vision on what you want to accomplish and get that out. And then along with that, like I explained before, finding out, okay, how much does it take to run our household? If the wife doesn't know, or sometimes even the husband, you know, because I have a lot of women taking care of mm-hmm. the household budget these days as well. Mm-hmm. Understanding where money is going on a monthly basis. How much is the mortgage? How much do we spend for groceries? You know, what does our tax bill looks like? What do we have in credit card debt? And really looking at the whole lay of the land on what that's going to look like right now. And then, of course, some things are going to change in retirement. You're not going to have, you know, money set aside for a 401k plan. You may travel less in terms of the day-to-day commuting expenses, so those things will go away. But then on the other hand, there may be some expenses that get into your budget that you didn't have, the increased travel, because a lot of times people, you know, if they have extra time, the first thing mm-hmm. that I hear is, I want to do more traveling, I want to do more hobbies, and so discretionary expenses tend to creep up in that as well. So some things will be subtracted, some things will be added, but at least having an understanding of where you need to focus in on right now, thinking about retirement, is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. All right, so you're saying that we need to look at some basic lifestyle questions like where should we live, where mm-hmm. do we think we want to live, and obviously you're saying some people are going to say, I'm staying right where I am, and some people are going to go for a snowbird lifestyle, and then there might be some people that just say, oh, no, this is the time when I'm going to move to Arizona or, you know, some warm place. Maybe they say I'm going to become an expat and mm-hmm. Live outside of the country. So clearly this is something that shouldn't be done on a whim. This discussion of where you will live is something that makes a big impact on what kind of financial situation we find ourselves in.
Exactly. You know, the considerations on, you know, proximity to children and grandchildren. You know, a lot of times people say, oh, well, I think after I retire, we can move closer to the kids, so we can be close to the grandkids. Also, affordability, like you mentioned, you know, you get a lot of expat situations really trying to stretch that retirement dollar, and people looking overseas or you know, countries like Panama and other areas really trying to stretch that retirement dollar in terms of affordability. And then just regular general preferences in terms of climate, recreation. You know, they don't want the day-to-day rat race on some of the urban areas, so maybe they want to go to smaller towns. So really, where do you want to live is probably the kind of the top question that I ask people when they start to consider retirement, is where do you want to live? Because it really kind of drives, like you said, some of the other decisions on how much do I need to accumulate, what type of things do I need to put in place now, considering that.
Mm-hmm. Well, in a way, to me, it almost seems like, I don't know if I would consider it like a chicken and the egg situation, but it seems to me that some of the things that people have to make decisions on, it's a big puzzle the way it looks like. I mean, you could ask them what income, where will your income come from, you know, are you going to be working or not, but maybe those answers that they would give you depend on where they want to live, what they expect to do, and to a certain extent, how long. I mean, none of us knows how long we're going to live, but we might have some idea based on family life history, you know, that we could say, well, my grandparents and my parents lived into their 90s, so knock on wood that I continue with good health, you know, I expect that I'm going to live that long too. So then in that case, clearly, you know, hopefully you've got your funding set out in such a way that it can last that long.
Mm-hmm. That's the main challenge that people consider, because people are living longer these days. Like mm-hmm. you said, you know, you can basically kind of look at life expectancy. Of course, nobody knows how long they're going to live. But based on family history, you know, a lot of people are living into their 90s, even hundreds. You have a lot of what they call centenarians out there that are mm-hmm. living well into their hundreds. So with a lot of times when you think about retirement, you can actually be in retirement longer than you actually had a working career. So really, how do you really plan for, let's say, 30, maybe 40 years of income on that? It's become quite a challenge. You know, just to throw a statistic out there, if you're age 60 for a woman, you're probably expected to live about another 23.8 years. So you're somewhere at about, you know, 83, 85, looking at that, and then even, you know, longer. Now, it's a website that, that I recommend a lot of times, and it looks at how to estimate a life expectancy. It's called livingto100.com. And sometimes I recommend people go there. Now, it has a lot of series of different questions. I think it's about maybe 40 questions, but they're lifestyle questions on do you smoke, what type of lifestyle, do you exercise, what you eat. And they can roughly give you an estimate on, you know, how long you, you may, what your life expectancy may be based on your, what your lifestyle. So livingto100.com is a good place to kind of start to kind of look at it. When I do planning, I really look at looking at 100, and then, you know, if things happen and you pass away earlier, you'll have money. But if you plan on the other side and you don't have enough money, you live to 100, then you're out of luck. So it's best to at least plan to 100. Anywhere between 95 or 100 to ensure, at least to try to ensure that your money's going to last between those when you retire, at, let's say 65 to at least 95 or 100.
All right. Well, I want to get to the discussion about, you know, where that income that we need is going to come from. But before we get to that, I'd like to jump ahead to the whole question of when will we, you know, one of the questions I know that you say we have to ask ourselves is, when will we start Social Security? And given the discussion that's been going on in the presidential debates, I'm curious as to what your advice is for people right now, because what I'm hearing in the presidential debates, I think what Romney was saying was that, you know, he's saying that anybody who's got Social Security right now can count on it if he were to be elected, but he would make some changes for people that that haven't reached that point yet. Is that, did I understand that correctly?
Yeah, I mean, Social Security is definitely one of the hot topics that, of course, it's very political. You know, do we keep the system as it is? Do we, you know, make changes to it as well? And is it going to be privatized, or is it going to be more of a buy into the system basically who's grandfathered in? So, you know, both power on each side, you know, Democrats and Republicans have their way to deal with Social Security. But what I generally recommend is looking at how much you're going to receive by doing the retirement estimator. They're not sending out those nice little statements that they used to anymore.
Oh, darn. they used to be kind of useful.
Yeah, and they were kind of useful. You can expect there's somewhere around your birth date that you can expect your Social Security statement. But, of course, as anything, they're trying to reduce the deficit. That was one way to save money, was not sending out all of these statements. Okay, so that really really puts us in the situation where we need to find out what our retirement estimation would be from Social Security. So if you go to ssa.gov/estimator, you will go to the retirement estimator, and then you can put in your information, and you can see where your, what they call, quote-unquote, normal retirement age would be. And then if you wanted to take retirement at 62, which is the earliest you can get it started, then your normal retirement age, which is somewhere between 65 to 67, depending on when you were born, and if you wanted to wait until 70. So there's three parts on how to determine. Now, the longer you delay, of course, the higher the benefit's going to be. So there are really two ways to analyze that. One is a break-even age, so that basically views Social Security as an asset. So if you start later, I would suggest starting later if you or your spouse expect to live longer than age 78, of course, because then that way, you know, you're using it more as an asset. Now, if you look at the other way to analyze the Social Security as a longevity protection, that views life insurance more as an insurance. So you would start later if you want to insure a higher income in your old age. So, for example, if you're age 60 now and age 66 is your normal benefit, you would get $2,000 a month. At age 85, you would be, let's say if you started at 62, you would get $2,992. At age 70, if you waited to age 70, that same benefit could be $5,265. Mm-hmm. Now, once you make that decision to retake it early, it's going to be reduced for the rest of your life at 62. Mm-hmm. So you really need to, you know, it's one of those it depends answers. Two ways to analyze it, more of a break-even age as an asset or the longevity protection to get the higher income in old age. Mm-hmm. So looking at those points, and especially starting at that ssa.gov/estimator and see those different points at age 62, at age normal retirement age, and then age 70, and then really figure out where you want to, if higher benefit is better for you, if that's what you want to do, then probably taking it a little bit later towards 67 or your normal retirement age would be best for you.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you a question here where you're probably going to tell me, well, Ann, you're asking me to look into a crystal ball, but I'll try anyway. You know, I've often thought that I would certainly wait as long as possible to take Social Security, and I'm 60 right now, so this is, you know, certainly something that I'm at a point where I need to start thinking about. But I've always thought that I would put it off as long as possible, but now listening to the debates, I start to wonder, well, if I put it off until I'm 70, doesn't that put me into a situation where maybe it's not there? Maybe the new government order has come in and it disappears somehow. Or is that not possible at all for it to totally disappear since I did pay into it?
Yeah, I know. I get that a lot. I think it's more of a let me take the money and run situation because I know it's there now versus let me wait. But from what I'm understanding with the Social Security conversation, so to speak, is that, you know, people at a certain age will be kind of grandfathered in. People under a certain age, they may want to be concerned. And actually, when I started doing planning, I actually look at Social Security as an extra kind of gravy for people who are 50 and under because I'm not sure. It's a gray area. For people that are 55 plus, I generally look at the Social Security system as kind of one of those third legs in your retirement income strategy. And then it's those decisions, do I take it now, do I take it later, and things like that. So, you know, to answer your question, it would be, I think, you know, looking at the situation, your particular situation, waiting later, it would probably still be there for people in your age range.
Mhm. All right. Are there any other questions that people typically ask you about Social Security that we should make sure we anticipate that people are wondering about that are listening here?
No, I think it's really how much will I receive and, you know, really getting a solid understanding of what the retirement estimator, especially now that they're not giving out the statements. And really, you know, when you get those statements or even when you do the estimator online, analyze the statement because a lot of times it could be incorrect. So if you had a job previously and it wasn't reported or they were reporting a lower salary or the quarters that you had at a particular job, really analyze your Social Security statement. I know a lot of people get it in and then they just look at it, okay, here's my statement, and then I'll throw it out, or, you know, they'll basically put it to the side. But really take a look, especially now when you start doing your retirement planning, is how much can I count on Social Security? And looking at and making sure that statement is correct is the best thing. And if it's not, really having a conversation and calling, you know, your local Social Security Administration Department or visiting them to say, I don't think this is right, can we go over that? Because if that's going to be a fairly good piece of your retirement income, it's really best to try to get it correct as possible to make sure you know, because that's one of those fixed income pieces that you know, we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, the retirement income sources. But Social Security is one of those fixed income sources that you can basically count on if it's in your strategy. So having that figure monthly is more accurate as possible is the best thing that you can do.
Okay. All right. Well, then given that, I guess the next question is the one that I just said I know we need to talk about is now that we started out with saying with what you suggested is that we need to figure out how much we will need at retirement, then it seems to me that the next question that we have to ask is where will that income come from? And you referred to the potential of Social Security as a third leg, so obviously there must be a couple of other legs that you're putting in front of that.
Yes, a couple other legs to think about. Retirement income sources, they mostly come from, of course, you know, Social Security, pension, if you're still lucky to have one out there, earning some work if you continue to work in retirement, and, of course, asset income, which would be more of the retirement plans that you have through your employer, through your 401k and 403bs if you're teachers and things like that. So really looking at kind of four income sources, Social Security, pensions, earnings from work, and an asset income. Okay. Now with pensions, if you're looking at pensions, will you get one is one. What I am finding and what I have seen lately is that, you know, over a course of, you know, a 30-year career, you've had a variety of different jobs. Some people leave jobs and there may still be a small pension available to them. So really hunting down these pensions during this process may be something that you would want to do because you may have left a job 10, maybe 20 years ago, and you stayed for a significant amount of time. There may be still some money there on the table for you when you reach 65 or retirement age for there. So really finding out if you're eligible for a pension at a previous employer that you may have forgot all about. So really looking at, you know, all of your previous jobs. I worked here, worked there, worked there. Did they have access to a pension? You know, really track, making sure you track that down as well. Also with pensions, when do you become eligible to receive it? A lot of times it may be, you know, 65 at normal retirement. It may kick in at 70, whatever the case may be. Know the rules on when you will be eligible for the pension income, if you're eligible to receive a pension. And then, of course, how much is it going to be from there? And then with pensions are a little tricky. They give you a couple of different options. One is an annuity option where if you wanted to provide a survivor benefit to a spouse, you would have an opportunity to do that through an annuity. Or you can take pensions in lump sum. So a lot of people are taking their pension as a lump sum. You know, especially with a lot of employers that may be a little shaky, people that say, you know, take the money and run situation.
Right.
I would rather have my pension in a lump sum and then I can reinvest it myself, you know, from there. So those are some of the things that you need to be concerned about when you have pension money there.
Okay.
If you're looking at more now, of course, you know, you have work, you know, are you going to work during retirement, either full-time or part-time? Some people, you know, go back to, you know, part-time work. They, you know, they've had all of the fun that they wanted in retirement. It wasn't as great as they thought it would be. Now I have to have something to do. I think I want to go back and work part-time, at least to bring in a little income, but then also just to get out of the house and do something. So some people have, you know, work during retirement. And then, of course, how much income can you expect from the part-time work or full-time work? And then how long do you expect to do it? Sometimes people just go back to work for, you know, a few years just to kind of bring in a little extra money, like if they get out of the house, have something to do. But work has become another income source for people who are, quote-unquote, retired from their, you know, kind of normal career and then just want to do something a little bit extra to bring in extra income there. Assets from your savings accounts to your investment accounts and your qualified money, 401ks and things like that, you must create an income stream from that. And there's a couple of different ways to do that. that. So how much income do you need to draw from your personal assets, and then when do you need to do that is one of the things that a lot of people say, okay, I have a 401k or have an IRA, you know, how much do I start taking out? How much am I going to need, and when do I need to start taking monies out of that? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Did you want me to go on and explain those?
Yeah, I think that's a really good thing to discuss.
Okay. Well, for asset incomes, there are a couple of different approaches to do it. There are four different approaches. One is live off the interest. You always hear, you know, from grandma and grandpa, everybody's like, I'm going to live off the interest. Everybody knows about that approach.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is mandatory versus discretionary approach. So you're looking at more of what do you need to kind of your guaranteed income sources on your mandatory expenses. I have to eat, I have to live someplace, things like that. And then everything else would be funded as discretionary, would be funded a different way out of a different bucket. So you're looking at kind of, you know, different buckets approach. The other one is the 4% rule, which is you're looking at withdrawing 4% on your income out of your accounts on an annual basis. So you do your first year withdrawal at 4% of the account value, and any subsequent withdrawals you increase each year by the inflation rate. So you're looking more at the 4% rule withdrawal there. And then the last approach or strategy for retirement income stream would be the bucket strategy. And with buckets, you're looking at assets that are placed in, you know, not literally buckets, but theoretically you're looking at, okay, I have a little bit in this bucket, I have a little bit here, and I have a little bit there. And what you're looking at is basically time horizons. The first one is more of a short-term bucket, your 0 to 5 years that you're looking at, and then another bucket would cover your 5 to 10 years, more of your midterm type expenses, and then 10 years plus, which would be your long-term expenses. So you have expenses divided into, let's say, a vacation fund, a rainy day fund, health care, long-term care, things like that would be more of a bucket strategy on how to do that. Now, when you're thinking about doing the bucket, it's where you look at your short-term expenses, which would be your basic, to cover your basic living expenses, your food, housing, utilities, taxes, health care, insurance, and emergencies.
Mm-hmm.
And the monies that come from that usually come from Social Security, your pensions, any part-time income, and investment income. So that's kind of bucket number one, short-term expenses. Then you have your midterm expenses. These are your travel, entertainment, house, car repairs, education. And then that's a separate bucket of more kind of lifestyle expenses in that bucket. And then the third bucket is more of your long-term bucket. And these are, you know, how do I keep my portfolio growing? Because those are the monies that you're going to need much later in the future. You can continue to let those monies grow in an investment account or your portfolio, and those are the monies that you're going to need right away. So you make sure that money continues to grow, so it's more of an engine to your overall retirement income strategy. The longer it's out, the more you can let it, you know, continue to grow so you can fund the other buckets. So those are kind of some of the approaches when you're thinking about doing an asset income stream. One is to live off of the interest, so you're basically looking at assets that are invested in income-producing or securities or investment products that will be able to give you income, and you have the principal that's untouched. And then you have the mandatory versus discretionary expenses. So you're looking at the mandatory expenses coming from your guaranteed income sources, which are Social Securities, annuities, pensions, things like that, and any discretionary expenses coming from the growth potential in your portfolios. And then you have your 4% rule where you're taking 4% out of the account value, and then you have your different bucket strategies. So those mm-hmm. are basically some of the strategies when you're thinking about how do I create an income stream off of my personal assets, my 401k, my IRAs, and things like that. Now, there's some of the things of when to start taking it because there's so many rules and regulations with retirement plans, 401ks, and IRAs that you need to be aware of when you start doing your retirement planning. Now, I think most of everybody is familiar with the 59-and-a-half rule, which means if you take money out of your retirement plans before you're 59-and-a-half, there's a 10% early withdrawal penalty that they give you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you plan on an early retirement, you need to have resources that are not not tied up with the 59-and-a-half rule. If you plan mm-hmm. on retiring prior to 59-and-a-half, anything after that, you're good. The other number that you need to be concerned about when you're doing retirement income is the 70-and-a-half rule, and that's basically monies that you need to start taking out of retirement plans and IRAs. You've had basically tax-deferred growth in these investments, and, of course, Uncle Sam is going to want the money now,
mm-hmm.
so that you have to start taking money out of retirement accounts, 401ks and IRAs, at 70-and-a-half, and this is called the required minimum distribution, and it's basically money you have to start taking out. You may or may not need it, but regardless, you need to start taking the money out. If you do not, there is a heavy 50% penalty of what you didn't take out. So you don't want to get caught in the 70-and-a-half rule
mm-hmm.
when you start doing your income strategy planning. So those are basically some numbers that you need to start thinking about, kind of the 59-and-a-half rule, the 70-and-a-half rule, and then really looking at the retirement income and different approaches. Now, I know
okay.
that was a mouthful.
Well, clearly there was a lot that you said there. The next questions that anyone would ask is probably going to depend on each person who you might have been consulting with. They would probably have to make a decision to ask the next question based on their own situation. So I guess part of the next thing that we should talk about is when they're looking at those buckets that are available to them, not everybody is going to have all of those buckets available to them, and probably the fewer buckets that are available to you, that would mean it would help to give the answer to the question that we also have alluded to for people to decide whether or not they should work. It would seem to me that if you've got full buckets in all four of those areas that you were talking about, then
mm-hmm.
certainly you're in a wonderful situation where you can just decide what would I like to do with my life. But if you're saying, Pam, I don't have any pension and I don't have very much that I expect that my Social Security is going to pay out to me, then clearly those type of people are probably going to say, I probably have to look at working in some way or another.
Yeah, I mean, more people are going to start, if you don't have the different, buckets that I just mentioned and you just alluded to, is that, there's some things you're going to have to, continue to work.
Mm-hmm.
You do have to basically look at more of a lifestyle, change as
mm-hmm.
well. I mean, so you're looking at, if you don't have the resources, I have to live off the less, and that's when a budget comes into play on what's actually mandatory and what's discretionary in your budget. So really creating a solid budget. If you don't have, a lot of resources available to you in retirement, is that, there may be, coursework, but, if you want to create the lifestyle that you want, really understanding what's mandatory and what's discretionary through a budget as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, ways to earn extra income. There's also, looking at reducing living costs. That's what you have to start doing when you look at your budget. It's like, okay, I can't afford this or I can't afford that. Really looking at a reduction in lifestyle. unfortunately, mm-hmm. sometimes you have to do, okay, I can't have this, but, you know, maybe if I cut back on this particular thing, I could, you know, do something a little bit different mm-hmm. as well. And then really just kind of downsizing, you know, mm-hmm. selling things that you don't need. You know, there's a lot of people, as they go into retirement, there's excess stuff in their house, mm-hmm. houses. Maybe there's some things that you can sell, you know, in order to, you know, generate income and put money away and things like that. So there's a, you know, even with, you know, people with little to no money in retirement, you know, you're not going to work for the rest of your life. But, you know, it may not be the ideal situation. But working with what you have and then looking at where you are and then creating a budget on things that you need to pay and things that can be cut out of your budget is a good place to start when you start thinking about, okay, I don't have a whole lot of resources. What can I do? Those are some of the things that you need to start with first, really kind of getting back to basics on what do I absolutely need to run my household and then what kind of mm-hmm. things can wait, or more of the kind of discretionary lifestyle things.
Okay. Now, say if a person has been lucky enough to, they've lived in their house for 20 years or so, so their mortgage is pretty much paid off for them, and they're in a situation where they say, okay, I'm going to have to look at ways to reduce my expenses. Is there a general rule of thumb that you would advise people on the concept of either try to sell that house and move to a smaller home where then they can get some of that money out of the house? Or what's going on with this reverse mortgage situation? I hear people tell me that a reverse mortgage is a terrible thing, should never be considered, and yet I see commercials for it on TV. So I don't know what to think about it.
Yeah, I see a lot of, I think the latest one was Henry Winkler that I saw on a reverse mortgage commercial. I was like, wow, the Fonz is doing reverse mortgages these days. It always comes down, and it depends on each person's situation. If a person basically is in their home and they've been there, you know, for 30 plus years, they don't want to move, they don't want to do anything, and they want to stay, but then they're tight on their budget, perhaps a reverse mortgage may be an option for them if they just plan to stay in the house and, you know, don't plan to either sell it or give it or basically leave it as an inheritance to children and things like that. Because once you do the reverse mortgage, it does, in essence, the bank owns it, and then they're giving you an income stream off of your equity in your home in order to do so. So mm-hmm. if you have a strategy where this is, you want to stay in the house, you don't have any plans to do anything else after, you know, you're gone, then that may be a better situation in order to free up some cash flow if you're strapped for cash. If you plan on having the house and the family and doing things like that and leaving it for children and things like that, a reverse mortgage may not be a good idea for you. Mm-hmm. So that's why I said it kind of depends on each person's situation and what they want to do with their home and what's the best case scenario for them. If they have any inkling that they're going to leave it as an asset to someone else, then, like I said, the reverse mortgage may not be a good idea for them.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, one of the things that you told me that we would be sure and discuss here, under lifestyle questions, we talked about that we would, you know, lifestyle questions that a person has to ask themselves as we're making these decisions is, where will we live, what will we do, and of course that question that we alluded to, the unknown question is how long will we live, where we can give some kind of a guess on that. But then I think the most important one is surprises. What surprises will our life hold? And certainly I think we've all lived long enough to know that surprises are something that you can't really plan for, but they're going to come along.
Yeah, they're going to pop up in the situation. And, you know, when I was thinking more of the surprises that come up, most of it is, you know, related to either health or, you know, family issues, of course, you know, the economy lately, that has been a big surprise for a lot of people who thought they would have been retired, you know, several years ago. You know, that was a surprise that jumped into a lot of people's retirement planning scenario. So, you know, those are generally some surprises. You know, you may not have the ideal retirement because, you know, someone got sick and mm-hmm. in your family, or your spouse passed away earlier than, you know, you had both planned. So those are some of the surprises that I tend to see when I'm doing retirement planning with clients, is that there's some either health issues that has popped up, and now retirement looks a lot different than what they had envisioned. And then really, how do I deal with that? Maybe I may not have all of the resources available now because, you know, my spouse passed away, and I don't know if I wanted to do the retirement plan that we had both planned together. I may want to mm-hmm. downsize and sell a house and do something different. So retirement planning looks a lot different than what was originally planned. And of course, you know, family, what I'm getting a lot is with boomers, is that you get boomerang kids. You know, what mm-hmm. that is college kids who come back home, and because the economy is down and they can't find jobs, now they're living with mom and dad, and mom and dad is about ready to plan for their retirement, and now they have adult children in their house. So that is a different dynamic. And, you know, I planned on doing one thing, but now I have resources that I am basically raising a kid again because I have to, you know, put some resources towards adult children, and then even some adult children past 30 coming back home with spouses and grandkids and things. So there are a variety of different surprises that life holds for you, and you just kind of got to roll with the punches. But you have to be aware that it may not be a perfect scenario when you start planning mm-hmm. out, that some things may pop up and you just have to make adjustments accordingly.
Sure. I can envision a situation where, you know, maybe a couple has decided that, you know, an expat type of a lifestyle is something that really appeals to them. They've always had this wanderlust, and, you know, so they think, oh, this would be a perfect time, you know, let's go live in South America or maybe in Europe or something like that. And then suddenly the situation where a child loses a job, you know, that child who would want to come home kind of a thing, they can't really come home to Panama, you know.
Exactly.
That would seem like it would make it pretty hard for that child to find another job if they're living outside of the country. So I can
yeah.
see that.
Exactly. That would be quite a challenge. It's like mom and dad has picked up and moved to, you know, Panama.
Mm-hmm.
What do I do now?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that would definitely be a challenge for people. But you know, things pop up. You know, what I get a lot is, you know, people are still recovering from the turmoil of 2008, and values are just starting to come back with homes around the country. And, you know, portfolios and things like that. But, you know, that put people out of retirement maybe 4 or 5 years versus, you know, right when they decided to, maybe I want to retire in 2008, now I have to work a little bit longer. So that's one of those surprises or monkey wrench that were thrown into a lot of people's retirement plans.
Mm-hmm. And even I'm thinking of in my own family, I know I have a niece who their home just burned down, you know, and that was a mm-hmm. surprise that you know, they certainly weren't anticipating that. In that situation, their former mother, I guess their, let me think about this, their grandma had just moved to a nursing home and her house hadn't sold, so the mm-hmm. the family that where their house burned down, they're temporarily living in grandma's house where will they rebuild their house, but certainly that kind of situation, you know, even if there's insurance money to pay for, you know, that a house burned down and you know you have to get it rebuilt, that still is a kind of surprise that does have to have an impact on on finances. So I guess that says something about the concept that we all need to have some kind of a little bit of money socked away to try to account, or hopefully we can find a way to sock away some money for those sorts of surprises that we just can never expect and anticipate what they might be.
Yeah, exactly. And that's always, you know, one of the things that I explain to people is that having some type of, you know, cash reserve or emergency fund or something available just in case, you know, something is thrown into your budget that you weren't aware of that came up, you have to have a way to deal with it. And, you know, having at least something to the side would help in that particular situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've given us some wonderful information here, and I see that we've got some questions that have come in from listeners. So if it's okay with you, if we've covered pretty much the main things that you want to cover, let's go to the questions. Otherwise, if I've missed something that we should have talked about, we can cover that first.
Let's see. No, just to put out a few statistics that I was looking at a little bit earlier about women and retirement resources. Not to put a damper on it, but really thinking about, you know, some things. It says only 28% of women in this country earn a pension. So there's a few of us that have pension money out there as well. Mm-hmm. And then 25% of women average 25% less than men in terms of their Social Security benefits. And, of course, the women only get 80 cents on the dollar that every man earns. So, it's, you know, I said that to say it is really, really important for women to take control of their own retirement because we're already behind the curveball when it comes to a lot of these issues financially. So getting an understanding of where you are, what do you need to do, getting it in place, sooner rather than later is always the best thing to do. So I just really wanted to stress the important nature of this topic in terms of retirement income. Boomers are retiring, you know, in the record numbers, and it's going to keep going over the next, you know, several years. So, you know, it become a really, like I said, when we first started out with this conversation, a very hot topic that is only going to, you're going to hear about it all the time, is how are people retiring? What are they doing in terms of income resources? What do they need to do? How do they get the help? And really focusing in on it is key.
Mm-hmm. Now you talked early on about hunting down pensions from a job that we might have left. What about a situation where a person might have been married to someone who got a pension, but you got divorced from that person? Is there ever a chance that you can go back and get any kind of survivor benefits from a situation like that, or is the divorce kind of kills that situation?
Divorce in that particular situation is very slim in those. Now, where divorce and retirement income sources come into light is if in the Social Security situation. If you were married to your spouse for at least 10 years and you're at least 62 and you haven't remarried, you do have access to, if your Social Security is not higher, you can look at both, what yours will be and what his would be. You can take a portion of the Social Security that's available to you from Social Security based on your ex-spouse's Social Security benefit. So that's one of the monies that are left on the table a lot because divorced women aren't familiar with the rules and how it works with Social Security. You do not have to contact your ex-spouse. You just need to contact the Social Security Administration, tell them this is where I was married, you know, all of the rules that they're going to ask you, and then they calculate that benefit for you, and basically they give it to you. That's nothing that you need to do with your ex-spouse. It's not even anything that's taken away from him or his current spouse situation. It's something that's totally separate, but it is available to you.
All right. So that was a good question. And I guess then in the terms of the concept of hunting things down, most people probably wouldn't think of that.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, let's go to some of the questions that we've received from our listeners here. I've got a question from Helen in Montreal. So she's Canadian, and I don't know whether that's going to have an impact or not on your answer. But she says, I'm 57, nearly 58 years old, and I've never had a proper career. So how do I prepare for retirement? She says, I will have a Canada pension at age 60 or 65, or if I can wait, I'd get the best deal at 70, where it would be about $1,000 a month. But obviously, she says, this is not enough to live on. So what can I do in the next 10 years to prepare myself?
Well, I think with that one, it's really, you know, is there a way to start tucking away extra money between now and when she plans to retire? You know, if there's even, and I'm not familiar with Canada, but if there's a way to put away maybe an IRA or an extra savings account or, you know, monies like that, and start just kind of putting away extra money between now and the next 10 years. You know, with 10 years, you have quite a bit of growth that can occur in the stock markets that are available and also interest that accumulates over that time period. So really getting started and with another resource that you can start saving additional monies towards retirement in order to supplement the, let's say, $1,000 a month that you would get. And then also, you know, that's another scenario on the whole budget thing. You know, it's not mm-hmm. going to be enough to live off of with Helen's main concern, really understanding where things are going now, what kind of things that can be cut out, what do I need to do in order to live within my means, and then also starting to prepare for the next 10 years, putting some extra money away if possible.
Mm-hmm. All right. That sounds good. And maybe she needs to look at some way that she can get some kind of a job, too, it would seem to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because
even
working at a place like Walmart might give you some benefits, you know, which could be beneficial. I don't know if working at Walmart in a part-time situation mm-hmm. gives benefits. I would guess probably part-time doesn't get benefits, but
I think it's still the same key on how do I generate more income right now, and then starting to put away that extra income as earned, maybe a side job like you said at Walmart or someplace else, and using that income to just tuck away if it's not needed right now, to tuck away for the next 10 years in order to build up an extra account to supplement retirement.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, now we've got a question from Kathy in Toledo. She says, what will happen to those of us who have no retirement money? What will quality of life be like? What kind of things should we try to do now?
Mm-hmm. I think I addressed that question when we were speaking. It's really, you know, if you have what you call relatively little or no retirement money, it's really looking at, you know, I keep bringing everything down to basically budget, because mm-hmm. it really gets down to how much do I need to kind of the bare bones, how much do I need to live off of in order to take care of my mandatory expenses. And then everything else, if you have extra, you know, looking at the discretionary. You know, quality of life is really, you know, it's what you make it. You know, I'm the ultimate optimist, is that, you know, you make out of life what you can. You know, if you're not given everything, and you may not have everything that's available to you, but, you know, you have you're here, and you basically, you know, deal with what you can in terms of living the life that you can with what you have. And what type of things that she can be trying to do is really, you know, are there ways right now to, you know, tuck away a little extra money? You know, my mm-hmm. main thing is that, you know, with everything, you know, maybe there's a little extra that you could start saving from, you know, looking at what you're spending on. You know, I always point to people, especially in our area, in Dallas, right outside of Washington, D.C., we have, you know, 50 billion Starbucks on every corner, is that, you know, if you save the money that you spend on Starbucks every day, you know, for the next, mm-hmm. you know, how long, how much you would have accumulated. So really looking at little lifestyle choices that you may want to, you know, give up temporarily, not altogether, that you can tuck away extra money for. You know, a lot of mm-hmm. times people with their budget, you know, think cable and things like that or mandatory expenses and not discretionary. If you can live mm-hmm. without, you know, cable for 6 months and put away $50 from cable bill, really mm-hmm. looking at ways that you could start saving and tucking away a little extra money now, you know, even if it's just a little bit, will do a tremendous amount of good towards retirement, you know. So mm-hmm. you really just have to start looking at kind of some lifestyle changes and then putting away money as necessary. If you have it there to put away, put it away and start making sure you start doing that if you can.
All right. I hope that Kathy finds that helpful. And now I've got a question mm-hmm. from Hollis. Coming from New York, and Hollis says, how does the decision to relocate overseas in retirement affect eligibility for and terms of Social Security, Medicare, and other federal benefits?
Well, Social Security is available to you. The things that you need to be concerned about with Social Security that you most of the time you do direct deposit, there may be some extra fees involved with transferring your Social Security to a overseas bank, and then you also have the conversion rates that you need to be concerned about, so there may be some extra fees along there. Medicare is not going to be available to you if you relocate overseas. Now, Medicare, if you're visiting overseas and you happen to have an emergency situation and you need to see a doctor and things like that, Medicare will cover those. But if you are relocated and decide to live overseas, Medicare will not be available to you. So you do need to make sure you have access to health care. Either get a policy, an international health care policy. They are available. Just do a search on the Internet. So there are a few companies out there that do that. And then also, you know, some health care through the country that you are going to move to, and making sure you have health care, but Medicare will not be available to you. And then the federal benefits, if you're talking about, you know, more of your retirement plans through the government, they're basically like Social Security or your 401k and things like that. They're in investment accounts, and they will be available to you for your use. The things that you need to be concerned about when you're relocating overseas is that if you do not give up your citizens, U.S. citizenship, that you are still responsible for taxes. You know, mm-hmm. Uncle Sam is going to find you regardless.
Okay.
So you still need to pay taxes. So I think it's a foreign income tax return or something like that that you do need to file. So if you're not going to give up your U.S. citizenship and have dual citizenship, you do need to still be concerned about your tax liabilities with the U.S. As well. Everything else pretty much translates accordingly except for the health care, and you make sure you do have to get the health care in place for yourself, either by an international policy or find health care in the country that you're going to relocate to.
Excellent. Well, I know I hear a lot of people, or at least I did in the past years or so, I started hearing people really talk about the concept of becoming an expat as a way to live well. If you hadn't been able to save enough money to retire in the United States, I'm not sure that I would ever get my husband to consider that, so I don't think that's an option for me.
No, that's an option for you. But it has become quite the buzz that a lot of people are looking at it to stretch their retirement dollars as well. What I have read that makes it a little bit easier is if you move to a basically a country that's a U.S. territory, let's say Puerto Rico, Guam, things like that, you have basically the same benefits and you don't have to worry about any of the the eligibility benefits you have available as a U.S. citizen, so you would still have access to Medicare and things like that. So if it makes it a little easier, at least you'll be in a nice warm climate, your dollar will stretch further, but you won't have some of the complications.
Okay. Well, I don't see any more of questions that have come into the line in advance, but there might be people that are listening on the call that have some questions. So let me tell everybody who's listening that I opened the lines, and if anyone has a question that they'd like to ask Pam, just speak up, call it out, and we'll see what we can do to answer it. Nobody's jumping in.
Okay.
Well, is there anything else that we haven't talked about, Pam, that you think that we should? Otherwise, I'll say that we'll close this call up, because I see we have taken up our hour of time, and that's, you know, we don't want to go too much over the time that we said we were going to, and we will be covering another topic in a month, because you've got several topics that we're going to be covering for the next several months. If everybody else is excited about that as I am, I'm pretty looking forward to what we'll be covering.
Yes, I'm pretty excited about that too. But I think this wraps up this call. Like I said, I just want to stress that, you know, if you're considering retirement, it's not one of those things that you need to, you know, get started the year before. It really is a long process. I've seen people 10 years out really starting this process, putting things into place, at least getting the vision out there and starting to lay everything out, because it takes a while to, you know, track things down and, you know, put everything into place and start creating your ultimate lifestyle in retirement. You know, so sooner rather than later in terms of the planning. And, of course, I'm sure, Anne, if anybody had any questions after, you know, I will fill those. You can feel free to send me an email from the NABBW website. I will feel free to answer those if you have any other questions.
Okay, that's great. It's really been wonderful talking with you this evening, Pam. I thank you for being our guest here this evening and for the great discussion on life after work, creating a retirement income. And I thank everyone who's been listening to us this evening live. And, of course, as I said, the call will be recorded. So in the next day or so, I'll have it posted on the NABBW website available for people to listen to in the future, which I think is a wonderful benefit for people to know that they can come and listen to this again in the future. And that's wonderful what you said, Pam, that if they have any questions, they can feel free to contact you through the NABBW website, or I suppose they could email them to you. Would be the Pamela at JacksonSams.com? Would that be the best email, or do you have a different one?
Yep. Nope, that's the one. They can reach me there.
Okay, so that's JacksonSams.com, and then Pamela, Pamela. So thank you very much for being the guest tonight, Pam, and thank you to all of our listeners. And this concludes our call for this evening, and thank everyone for being here with us, and we'll look forward to talking with you again in a month about another topic related to getting ready for retirement and our finances. Thanks, Pam.
Great. Thank you, Anne. Bye-bye.
Good night.